Hello everyone, this is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm rooting for you today, here on the Courage Handy Ham System, World Radio Magazine, the online edition, for November 2011. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website, www.handyham.org. We'll begin by taking a look at the World Radio Online News Front. Keith Gilbertson, call K0KG, is named the CQDX Awards Manager. Following the retirement of Billy Williams and 4UF, who served the amateur radio DXing community for more than three decades, Keith Gilbertson, K0KG, of Rochart, Minnesota, has been named the CQDX Awards Manager. It was announced by CQ Amateur Radio Magazine editor Rich Mawson, W2VU. Williams took over administration of the CQDX Awards program in 1979, when the number of single sideband awards issued was in the mid-600s, and the number of CW, or Morse code awards, was in the mid-300s. Today, more than 2,500 single sideband SSB awards have been issued, as well as more than 1,100 CW. That's the Morse code certificates. In addition, the intervening years have seen the introduction of the CQDX-RTTY, that's Teletype Award and Honor Roll, and CQDX Field Award Program and the CQIDX Award Program. Gilbertson has been a licensed ham since 1970 and a shortwave listener before that. He holds CQDX awards for both CW and single sideband and is on the honor roll for both modes. Additional DXing awards include CQ's WPX Award of Excellence and 5-band worked all zones. Billy Williams has been a rock here at CQ since long before I arrived, Mawson said. He has always run the award so efficiently that it seemed to run itself and has always been a source of excellent counsel, even on matters beyond the DX Award program. I will miss working with Billy, but I also look forward to an excellent relationship with Keith. Any correspondence relating to the CQDX Award program should be directed to Keith Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, amateur call K0KG, that's Kilo Zero Kilo Golf, 21688 Sandy Beach Lane, Rochart, R-O-C-H-E-R-T, Minnesota, M-N, zip code 56578. Via email, you could send it to his name. I'll spell it out. Just listen carefully. All lowercase, K-E-I-T-H.GILBERTSON at Q, the letter Q, .com. Now, here's an update on the November DXing. In Senegal, Jeff Demers, D-E-M-E-R-S, call N1SNB, will be active as 6-Victor-7-Victor, 6V-7V, from La Somoni, Senegal, during the CQ Worldwide DXCW contest on November 26 and 27 weekend. Outside the contest, he plans to be on 160 and 80 meters CWN single sideband from November 23 to 29. That information is from QSL via N1SNB, and we thank them for that. Now, in the next news front piece, some of you old-timers may remember the name Heathkit. Deja vu. Heathkit to produce kits for radio amateurs. Again. When Heathkit announced in August it was re-entering the kit production business, it had no anticipation such as enthusiastic response from the ham community. In fact, at the time, it had no intention of producing amateur radio-related projects. That has changed. According to a report in the ARRL letter, we're quoting here, the response was really overwhelming, exciting, and scary. Ernie Wake, Heathkit's director of sales and marketing, told the league. The scary part is that the brand name has so much loyalty in the ham community that we don't want to disappoint the people who have such fond memories. Amen to that, huh? In response, Heathkit is hoping to have one or two kits for amateurs by the end of the year, Wake said. We won't rush to market just to get there. We want to develop a line of kits in the tradition of Heathkit. We thank AWRL Letter and our own CQ staff for that. And there's an additional commentary in November's CQ Amateur Radio Magazine. Kit building editor Joe Eisenberg called KZRNEB gives a full report on Heathkit's Amateur Radio Kits initiative. It's on page 73. It's not in this edition because this is World Radio Online. A next news piece, committee reviewing super high frequencies band plans. The AWRL board has established a committee to update the suggested band plans on 33, 23, 13, and 9 centimeters, the super high frequencies. According to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline, if you are active on any of these SHF bands or are using them in other ways, please send your email to Southwest Division Vice Director Marty Wall, W-O-L-L, call N0VI, who serves on that committee, and to let you know how to provide your input to the process. You may also contact your AWRL Division's representative on the group. We thank the communications directors at AWRL and the Southwest Division Communicator for that information. Our next piece on the online news front, new MCOM network established in Australia. A new emergency communications network, MCOM-net, has recently been set up by the architects of Australia's Red Cross Emergency Communications. The RECOM organizational and technical model adopted in 1997, which embeds trained radio amateurs within a non-government organization or emergency services organization, has been extremely successful in its work with Red Cross, the authority said. Strategies for embedding amateurs with relief organizations have long been practiced in the United States. MCOMNet will provide advice to amateur groups who wish to embed trained operators into other NGOs and ESOs, the organization said. Access to MCOMNet will be restricted to operators who have Wireless Institute of Australia National Emergency Communications Training qualifications and who are also members of an amateur emergency communications entity embedded in the NGO or ESO. A significant personal commitment is required. You can find more information about that, the MCOMNet, in an article by Phil Wake, VK2DKN. At www.tinyurl.com/3ccbys8. That information was filed by the Amateur Radio Newsline and the Wireless Institute of Australia. We thank them for it. Next up is the editor's log, a ham's eye view from the Southwest Division Convention. The editor, of course, is Richard Fisher, KI6SN. While I'm thinking about it, here are some observations from HamCon 2011, the AWRL Southwest Division Convention, that was held September 9 through 11 at the Marriott in Torrance, California. Out here in La La Land, one of the knee slapper guffaw-induced one-liners is, when it rains in L.A., it comes down in Torrance. T-O-R-R-E-N-T-S. That was sure the case Saturday morning of convention weekend. Best part is the storm drove more hams inside, where fun ensued. It's great to work alongside CQ Communications staff members who are truly active radio amateurs, unlike some of the bloviators who talk the talk, and that's all, at other publications. Advertising director Chip Margellis, K7JA, lamented long and loud about missing a 6-meter opening to Central America on Friday. He was setting up the CQ booth. Sorry about that. Lots of young people attended HamCom, many of them licensed, many aspiring to be, maybe just along for the ride. It would be great to see more activity specifically targeting young or young people at amateur radio conventions. CQ amateur radio editor Rich Mawson and W2VU picked up some ideas along those lines at the Maker Fair in New York City recently. Check out his Zero Bias editorial in the November edition of CQ magazine. Renowned seismologist Kate Hutton was a ball of energy at HAMCOM, best known on Southern California's television and nationally as the Earthquake Lady, quite a distinction. K6HTN was working the crowd at the National Traffic System booth. You'll find a wonderful profile of her by Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, K-I-6-O-I-L, in this month's YL's column. We will be reading that for you folks later on. Now, speaking of K7JA, that's Chip Margellis. Chip spent a chunk of Saturday lugging heavy metal from the CQ booth to a conference room and back for a talk he gave to convention attendees about portable antennas for emergency communications. You can't tell me this guy isn't into amateur radio. Did anyone accuse hams of lacking joie de vivre and a sense of humor? Well, if they do, consider this. The Opus of Amateur Radio Knowledge and Lore, that's a title, by Eric P. Nichols, KL7AJ, was flying off the sales table at CQ's HAMCON booth. We've never seen anything like it. Check it out in CQ's online store. The title again is The Opus of Amateur Radio Knowledge and Lore by Eric P. Nichols. WRO goes mobile, a giant step for CQ's digital initiative. You'll find something new, innovative, and very exciting about the November issue of CQ Amateur Radio Magazine. It's available online. It's the first of CQ Communications Incorporated's print magazines to add a digital edition on the web. Joining World Radio Online, that's our publication right here, Amateur Radio's first online-only magazine. Soon to follow CQ into the digital world will be CQ VHF, that's a title, and Popular Communications magazines. Popular Communications is another title of theirs. The digital editions will supplement, not replace, current print editions and will feature enhancements not possible in the print medium, said CQ Communications Editorial Director Rich Mawson, W2VU. Versions will be available for a variety of online and mobile platforms and will be hosted by Zinio, Z-I-N-I-O, one of the top names in the e-magazine hosting business. This will assure that all our magazines will always be able to take advantage of new technology when it becomes available. Initially, digital editions will be compatible with the following platforms: PC, Mac, iPhone, iPad, Android 2.0, and higher. CQ Communications Production Director Dottie Kerdwider has been a key in development, management, and implementation of the digital transitions. You may thank her. The new digital products fall under the separate subscription plan for each magazine, of which WRO is now a part. A one-year subscription to World Radio Online is $19.95, just $1.66 per issue. Non-subscribers will be able to purchase individual issues for $2.99 each. Each magazine's digital edition will provide readers with fast, easy online access and links to enhanced web content, including more in-depth written material, video, audio, and a range of multimedia. Full details about CQ Communications Digital Editions is available at the website www.cq-amateur-radio.com/. And one last piece in the news run. November is WRO-PopCom Live Online Chat. World Radio Online and Popular Communications Magazine's live online chat sessions in October were combined into one mass gab fest on October 2. We like the idea so much, we're doing it again this year. You're invited to join with legions of WRO and Popular Communications fans on Sunday, November 13, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 0100 UTC, Universal Time Constant, on Monday, when we'll light up the chatosphere. Simply go to the Cover It Live window on the World Radio Online blog, and that's http://www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com, and sign in when the session has begun. You can visit there now to sign up to receive an automatic email reminder as well. These sessions are friendly and very casual. Please circle the date and time on your calendar. We'd be very happy to see you and hear you there. Remember, that's going to be Sunday, November 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our first piece is going to be featuring the Quarter Century Wireless Association, a good friend on not only the Talking Information Center, but also the Kerr Handyham System, who was frequently involved with these recordings along with Leisure Pursuits. It's titled QCWA's Responsibility and Youthful Endeavors. The author is Dave Hayes, Victor Echo 3, Juliet X-ray, that's a Canadian call sign, VE3JX. As I was browsing through some older QSTs, OSA magazines, I came across an item in the March 2009 issue. The short blurb on page 13 highlighted a young amateur named Tristan Hubb, HUBEKJ4BIW, of Collierville, Tennessee. The picture with the article shows Tristan holding up his just-earned DXCC certificate. What is significant about this is, at the time of his DXCC, he was only 9 years old. The article mentioned him obtaining his technician license when he was 8 and earned his general ticket at 9. QSD quotes, Tristan's grandfather is saying, in his first 5 months with high-frequency HF privileges, Tristan has made almost 2,500 contacts. The feature mentions that he is a life member of ARRL. He will certainly get his money's worth out of that, given his age. On the website QRC.com, Tristan reveals that his DXCC, that's working 100 distant countries outside of the continental contiguous United States, confirmed total is now 214. The certificates he presently holds include DXCC Mix, DXCC Single Sideband, DXCC CW, which is Morse code, worked all states, worked all continents, and DXCC 20 meters. Both his father and grandfather are licensed as KJ4BDN and K4XG, respectively. Tom Neal, K4XG, is one proud grandpa, as per the QRC.com website. And there's more. From the recent news items of the QSC newsroom comes the story of the 2011 Amateur Radio Newsline's Young Ham of the Year. She is Caitlin Cole, C-O-L-E, called KS3P, Kilo Sierra 3 Papa, of Harvest, Alabama. At age 11, she is the youngest person to receive this award. Why was she so honored? The ARN release said this when listing her accomplishments and appointments. On April 27, 2011, the Huntsville, Alabama area, including the small community of Harvest, was hit by a series of destructive tornadoes. The severe weather took a heavy toll in lives lost and property damaged. Electrical service was out for over a week. Caitlin and her father immediately volunteered to help with amateur radio relief activities. Caitlin began by logging contacts and running errands, but in short order took on the role of net control station, working for many days from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. With cellular and wireline telephone coverage being spotty to non-existent, Caitlin's duties as net control involved dispatching amateur radio operators with chainsaws and other rubble clearance machinery and debris pickup teams. For her efforts, Caitlin received many compliments from veteran operators on the professionalism that she displayed during this crisis situation. Caitlin is also assistant section manager for youth activities in the ARRL Alabama section. In this role, she visits many ham fests where she speaks to other young hams. A straight-A student entering sixth grade this fall, the 11-year-old also enjoys home brewing and construction. And folks, this is Bob, your reader. If you don't know the phrase home brewing, don't get the idea that she makes home brew, known as malt beverages, in her basement. Home brewing is making kits or making radios or other electronic equipment out of schematics and parts. Very brilliant. And construction. And she has posted on YouTube a video of herself building a QRP transceiver. QRP is very low power transceiver. I guess that's what part of the home brewing's all about. The daughter of Stanley, NX3P, and Amy Cole, Caitlin joined the amateur radio fraternity at the tender age of 8. She passed her technician exam in September 2009, her general in October 2009, and her extra class on January 3, 2011. Wow. Now, in parentheses, the Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is sponsored by the Amateur Radio Newsline with corporate support from Vertex Standard. Those are the fine people from Yaesu Communication, Amateur Radio Magazine, and Heal Sound. Now, running the numbers, doing some quick calculation reveals that both Tristan and Caitlin would be eligible for QCWA membership at the still young age of 33 in 2033 and 2034, respectively. We're always looking for new members at the Quarter Century Wireless Association, so we might as well think ahead. There is no doubt that Tristan and Caitlin are exceptional youths, and both of these fine young people had family members who helped mentor them. But one thing is clear. We need more youths to become active in amateur radio if our hobby is to prosper. The future of amateur radio, and QCWA for that matter, is in the hands of the young. The problem is overcoming the common erroneous perception that ham radio is old technology and of limited value in our modern society. Now, how do we leap that hurdle? The answer is by reaching out to the younger generation, showing it the value of our hobby to society, to the advancement of technology, and to just having fun. Many QCWA members and chapters are involved in that very thing. Now, regarding the Alberta connection, the Wild Rose Chapter, number 151, decided to become involved with Radio Amateurs of Canada. That's RAC. It's actually their youth education program. They call it YEP. Yep. It made it a mandatory to introduce and install amateur radio stations in Alberta, Canada classrooms. Now, that's a novel idea. Then a science teacher, Brian Jackson, who was very knowledgeable about the space program, became interested in amateur radio, got his license, which is VE6JBJ, and enrolled his school in the YEP. He suggested his school apply for a contact with the International Space Station. Ken Olke, VE6AFO, became the project coordinator for the idea. Their application was accepted, and AIRD, Alberta, became the first community in the province to have a school make contact through amateur radio with the ISS. It took place on December 2, 2005. How did it turn out? Outstanding. Reportedly, there are 720 students, along with parents, teachers, and staff, who watched in awe as 10 of their number were able to pose 18 questions to Commander Bill MacArthur, KC-5ACR, aboard the International Space Station, and receive his answers live. According to Ken Olke, VE6AFO, quoting, "To top all this off, we received tremendous media coverage, which put amateur radio on the front burner. News coverage was provided by CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company, News World, which was carried live nationally. As well, four other local TV stations aired this contact on the local news, three radio stations did interviews, and six local and area newspapers did an article with pictures. In addition, 13 Internet Radio Linking Program, that's IRLP, nodes were connected to the Discovery Reflector node 9010, and 23 connections were listening to the Shoutcast on the companion website. Special guests included a member of Canadian Parliament, the Superintendent of Schools, and one Associate Superintendent. a local trustee from RVSD Board of Trustees, the mayor of the city of Airdrie, four Airdrie aldermen, and emerging technologies manager from Alberta Education, the administration from Alberta's next school proposed for an ARISS contact. So, as a listener, I guess you could realize that it doesn't get any better than this. To date, Wild Rose Chapter Number 151 has done the same thing with three other Alberta schools. Think of the number of future potential radio operators created here, as well as the favorable publicity for our hobby. Well done, Wild Rose. The next piece from the QCWA is about a Chesapeake success. Tidewater Chapter Number 119 member Richard Siff, SIFF, called W4BUE, started a small club with some fellow chapter members called the K4AMG Memorial Club. Its purpose is to promote teaching amateur radio in the Radio Communications 1 and 2 courses offered at the Chesapeake Center for Science and Technology. This is in Virginia. The goal of this high school course is to introduce students to electronics and radio communications, including broadcast operations and techniques. There is a fully equipped broadcast station, its call is WFOS, with which the students gain hands-on experience in its operation. A full HF, amateur radio station, amateur call W4FOS, is part of the school's facilities as well, so the students are exposed to the joys of DXing and rag-chewing across the country, amateur radio style, of course. The K4AMG website explains the connection between amateur and broadcast radio. This is a quotation. Why amateur radio is a broadcast radio class? The answer is simple. When all three amateur radio licensing tests are passed, there is only about 30% more study required for the FCC commercial rules and regulations to obtain the general radio operator's license, which is an acronym GROL. This is a fine license to have for future work ethics. Each student who successfully passes the FCC technician exam is presented with a radio by the K4AMG Club, which spurs the candidates to study hard for the exam. They are also assisted to progress further to qualify for the general license. What has been the response? An indication of this is contained on a DVD that Richard sent me. It has interviews with students and an instructor telling how they felt about the amateur radio component in their curriculum. They were thrilled with the training and experience studying for the exams and operating the amateur station given them. They wanted, as well, to continue with the hobby no matter which direction their careers took them. We are very proud of our fellow QCWA members as well as all the others who are a part of this project. No doubt there are many other chapters and members involved in such youth-oriented successes. Each one of these stories is another brick in building the future of our great hobby. Please let us know about your success story so that we can share it. QCWA members are proud to be among those who are instrumental in invigorating the greatest hobby ever by introducing it to our youth. Why not join us in promoting the future of amateur radio while remembering the past? See you next year, DEVE3JX. Well, we're hearing so much interesting stuff about the young people and educating themselves with amateur radio involvement, the space station. Let's talk now about hamfests and special events. And those were sort of special events, but we're talking about the month of November. Let's stop at Split Rock, Minnesota, special event station W0JH, Whiskey Zero Juliet Hotel. It's November 5 to November 6 at the Split Rock Lighthouse from 1500 UTC to 2345 UTC to remember the Edmund Fitzgerald. They're operating on single sideband 21.360, 14.260, 7.260, 3.860, and digital modes as planned. You can get a QSL by contacting them. You might look at the website www.radioam.org. Davenport, Iowa. The 40th annual Davenport, Iowa Radio Amateur Club Hampfest and Computer Show will be held 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday, November 6th at the Clarion Hotel, 5202 North Bradley Street in Davenport, Iowa. Washington, Pennsylvania, WACOM, WACOM, 2011 Hampfest will be held on Sunday, November 6th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Washington County Fairgrounds. Holmdel, H-O-L-M-D-E-L, New Jersey, Special Event Station KC2LSD, November 11th, at the New Jersey Vietnam Memorial and Vietnam Era Museum and Educational Center. And that's right off the Garden State Parkway, exit 16. It's from 1300 to 2000. That's from 1 to 8 p.m. UTC. Alverton, Kentucky. The Kentucky QSO party take place on the 1400 UTC. That's 2 o'clock Saturday, November 12th to 0200 UTC Sunday, November 13th. Hey, for those of you who like to eat, in Litchfield, Illinois, the Central Illinois St. Louis Area Amateur Television Club, the 26th annual banquet, will be held on Sunday, November 13th at the Ariston Restaurant in Litchfield, Illinois. The banquet begins at 4 p.m. with the Get Acquainted Hour and dinner served at 5. Awards and prizes will be awarded after the dinner. There will be a small area for sales and swaps if you're interested in that. You can contact Scott Millick, K9SM, at the following phone number, area code 217-324-2412, about tickets, and enjoy yourself. Should be a great time. Now, Fort Wayne, Indiana, the 39th annual Fort Wayne Ham Fest and Computer Expo will be held Saturday, November 19, and Sunday, November 20, at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. That's at the corner of Indiana 930 Coliseum Boulevard and Parnell Avenue. Now, before you know it, another 30 days will be going by, and we get into that old December thing. For you snowbirds that are heading south, I'll give you a heads up for the Tampa Bay, Florida, 36th annual Tampa Bay Hamfest, to be held at the Manatee Civic Center on US 301 and Haven Boulevard, Palmetto, from Saturday, December 3 to Sunday, December 4, by the Florida Gulf Coast Amateur Radio Council. The doors open at 8 a.m. on Saturday and 8 a.m. on Sunday. Now, for you folks who love to do some contesting, if you're already amateur radio operators, or if you're just SWL listeners, shortwave listeners, and can tune the frequencies of amateur radio, it's a lot of stuff going on also in the contest corner. The big one for CW, or Morse code, is the ARRL Sweepstakes, Amateur Radio Relay League Sweepstakes. That's from November 5 through November 7. November 5, it's 2100 Zulu, 5 November to 0300 Zulu, 7 November. The bands are 160 through 10 meters, only CW, or Morse code. For those of you who are not familiar with CW, continuous wave. If you like horses and they mix with ham radio, you can go to the Kentucky QSO party on the 12th of November, that weekend, the 1400 Zulu 12 November, 0200 Zulu 13 November. They're going to cross the boards from 160 to 6 meters, not only CW, but single sideband and, if you have the capabilities, digital. If you really want to reach out for DX, the Japanese International DX Contest is on 0700 Zulu 12th November, 1300 Zulu 13 November. It's 80 through 10 meters, single sideband, phone, or voice. Single sideband is always, well, more or less always, voice. Now, if you're one of those persons who like to run for the beacon, or at least listen for the beacon on various frequencies, the dates for that one, it's going to be on the 20th of November from 0100 to 0300 Zulu. That's 2100, 2300 Eastern Time on the 20th of November. The bands are 80 through 10 meters CW, Morse code. ARRL Sweepstakes, that's always a huge one. That's on the November 19th and 21st weekend. It's 2100 Zulu, 19 November, to 0259 Zulu, 21 November. I said that right, 0259, 0300. In other words, less a minute. That's the way they run the ARRL sweepstakes. That's a voice again, single sideband, 160 through 10 meters. That's a really big national worldwide contest there. And if you're one of those old timers who still likes to do straight key sprints, the SKCC straight key sprint, try saying that fast. It's not easy. It's from 0 to 0200 Zulu on the 23rd of November. It's only a 2-hour contest. That's why they call it a sprint. And one more, another big one, the CQ magazine, WWDX, CQ WWDX. That one starts at 0 Zulu, 26 November to 2359 Zulu, 27 November. So there's a lot of great stuff for the month of November in the contest corner, for not only working with your radios in various bands and modes, but also for the listeners if you just want to listen to some exotic voices or CW, Morse code, fast or slow. You might want to practice with your little keyer yourself if you're in the mood. You might want to become a ham radio operator. That's a plus too. Well, back to the articles at hand. Looking West, Wanted, a single unified VHF slant UHF band plan. The author is Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. What's happening now with radio amateurs and frequency coordinators looking for space to install new digital voice repeaters is reminiscent of the early days of FM and repeaters. From the 1970s to the early 1990s, I preached via my 73 magazine column, that's a magazine, and later in the pages of World Radio, that's us, the need for a single unified national band plan for 29 megahertz up through light and beyond. Nearly from the time very high frequency slant, ultra high frequency began to become popular, I was there, as early as the mid-1960s. It was obvious that eventually new modes would emerge, each requiring a home in the spectrum. If none was offered, each new mode would employ squatters' rights to impose itself on a given band. For all those years, I was laughed at and derided. I was told I was an alarmist, that ham radio had, quoting, all this space on 6 and 2 meters, close quote, with which to work. Most hams in the 60s and 70s could not, in their wildest dreams, imagine 440 megahertz and higher bands would have much use. Except for some FM experimentation, 220 to 225 megahertz was ignored for decades until the lower 2 megahertz were lopped off for a new commercial technology that never emerged. Now everything, and I do mean everything, I predicted then have come to pass, and sadly, there remains the need for a single unified band plan for 10 meters and above. Separate state or regional band plans as we had then and have now aren't viable. The same band plan should apply to Miami as it would in Anchorage, Dallas, Minneapolis, or Honolulu. We can't tell other nations what to do, but the United States should lead by example. What modes? Where? There's a lot of hypothesizing based on the stories and rumors we hear. My sources may be a bit better than some because they are usually from those using some new exotic mode or trying to relive the past with the 50-year-old Heath tour. They want publicity for their cause du jour and turn to us in the media for exposure. The only way to know what modes are recognized in which parts of the spectrum is to listen and log. But who has the time or resources to do that in a country as large as the United States? It would take months, even years. Even the American Radio Relay League-backed band plans are mere suggestions, open to regional interpretation and modification. Most of these local needs are based on the wants and desires of the hams whose only participation in amateur radio is via a $99 2-meter handy talkie hanging from his or her belt with the repeater built into the radio. The biggest failing in all of this lies in the weak signal community. This is historically the pioneering aspect of VHF UHF and existed long before the first repeater Kirk or Clunker was ever heard. The sad part is that its members are so involved in weak signal technology that they failed in the ham radio political arena. The FM community understood the politics of ham radio from day one. They politicized themselves and their special interests as early as 1954 with the founding of the California Amateur Relay Council, CARC, a repeater council that was formed years before the first fully automated repeater took to the air. As FM and repeaters began to evolve and move across the nation, it was the CARC model of political control, maybe dominance is a better word, over FM operations that was adapted in state after state and region after region. So today, which community has the ear of the ARRL and FCC? It's the FM repeater segment because it matured and became far more politically savvy than any other aspect of VHF, UHF, ham radio operations. Had the weak signal, EME, or even the legacy AM community done the same, they would not be begging for tiny band slivers to stay alive. A need exists for a single, unified national band plan that encompasses every mode known today, a plan from which to expand, a plan that has at least the tacit backing of the ARRL, and one recognized using the principle in the FCC amateur service rules as adhering to good operating practice. Only then can there be assurance that all operators will have a place in the sun to play their favorite mode of amateur radio. Unfortunately, this will not happen until someone or some group takes the lead in the organizational process. Until then, we'll see more inter-mode squabbling rather than the cooperation that's so badly needed. Making this even more urgent have been congressional threats to the survival of 420 to 440 megahertz. If they come to pass, does anyone really think the repeater community that inhabits 440 to 450 megahertz will give up a single kilohertz of spectrum for other modes to use? I know they won't. In the end, survival of all weak signal operations and many other modes will not be predicated on their technology, but rather their ability to understand and actively participate in the ham radio political arena. It will become necessary for the various modes to form their own political action groups, just as FM did a half century ago, getting the attention of those decision makers in power. Perhaps the words of composers John Kander and the late Fred Ebb say it best in Chicago the Musical. That's a title. Give them the old razzle-dazzle, bead and feather 'em. How can they see with sequins in their eyes? That, my friends, is really what politics, even amateur radio politics, is all about. Now, on a slightly different topic, the IARU Region 1 adds new 2-meter repeater pairs. This item may not sound like it's very important if you live in North America, but elsewhere, it's a pretty big deal. Unlike in the United States, the 2-meter band is not 4 megahertz wide in many other countries. In many places, as well, it's the National Ham Radio Society, rather than individual hams, that holds all of the repeater licenses. So what's the big news? IARU Region 1, that's Europe and Africa, has voted in favor of creating a pair of new 2-meter repeater channels to relieve some of the on-the-air congestion in that part of the world. The new frequency pairs are 144.9750 megahertz and 144.9875 megahertz as inputs, with 145.5750 megahertz and 145.5875 megahertz as their complementary outputs. The IARU Region 1 and 2-meter band is only 2 megahertz wide from 144 to 146 megahertz. Only a small portion is allocated for FM repeater and simplex operations. In 1996, it was decided to change from 25 kilohertz inter-system spacing to 12.5 kilohertz with very narrow deviation to accommodate as many repeaters in a given area as is possible. The latest newly added frequencies were proposed by the South African Radio League and approved by a vote of 27-14 with 7 abstentions. No implementation date of this modification to the Region 1 band plan was announced, but you can bet it won't be long before there is activity on both of the new channel pairs. The nation of Portugal to give amateurs 50 and 52 megahertz beginning April 4, 2012. The National Communications Authority of Portugal has accepted a proposal by CT1DHM and called CT1FBF to amend the upper range of 6 meters effective April 4, 2012. That's next year, folks. The new limits will be from 50 to 52 megahertz once analog television disappears from that spectrum. So there's a big change with the television frequencies, obviously. Has to happen first. The implementation date coincides with the complete switch-off of analog TV broadcasting transmissions and changeover to digital terrestrial television. The information from this was courtesy of CT1ETL. Wishing you a great 2012. It is hard to believe that another year is about to fall into the history book, and 2012 is just up the road. None of us can hold back the sands of time, but what we here at the Pasternak's can do is to wish each and every one of you a most blessed holiday season and our wishes for a great new year. See you in January from just north of the City of Angels, DEWA6ITF, Bill Pasternak. Well, let's begin the article that's contained in the DX World section of the World Radio Magazine online. 5 decades later, DXers reunite. These are the good old days. We'll see what we can get out of this for a few minutes. The author here is Kelly Jones and Zero VD. In last month's DX World, we offered a few tips that can help with improving your direct QSL rate of return. While thumbing through the old shoebox looking for a few QSL cards to accompany that column, many memories came flooding back. It's amazing how those little pieces of cardboard can trigger such reminiscences. This month, we'll take a look at how today's technology reunites a couple of DXers nearly 50 years after their QSO. We'll take a lighter look as well at whether the golden days of the DXings have long since faded into the memories of the old-timers, or if they might actually be happening now. So let's see. Nearly 50 years later, that guy was me. Recently, one of the DX email reflectors, a very interesting conversation took place between a few DXers. Jim Brookmon, WA4PXP, was thumbing through his old logs. For whatever reason, he wrote, I looked back at my first log last night. At the time, I was WN4PXP, and what do I find? An entry on August 3, 1964, 3:36 p.m., before I understood Greenwich Mean Time, GMT, for a contact with KP6AZ, Jim, on Palmyra, that's an island, 579339. A few years later, I worked a few more PK6s, Jim said. At the time, I had no idea that he was somewhat rare DX, Palmyra Island. You might want to check back 50 years ago. You may have worked a good one without knowing it. Gary McClellan, K7ZD, replied, Jim, great memories. I was calling CQ as WNHAPN on a cold Ohio evening in winter of 63. A guy came back to me over and over, but I never heard such a strange call. He was determined to work and kept calling. It was EL2AD in Liberia. My parents and schoolmates were aghast when I showed them the QSL. Tony Martin, W4FOA, then chimed in, Hey, Gary, small world, that guy was me. I'm guessing the QSL card you have was the bright red one with large white letters? I would often go up in the novice bands and work the newcomers. I believe a lot of them probably didn't know where EL2AD was located. H.I. Thanks for the QSO and QSL, Gary. When I saw Tony's response, I thought, how cool is that? Here are 2DXers reuniting on an email reflector nearly 50 years after that QSO. I wonder if there is a QSL in the works for the email QSO. After thumbing through my old QSL cards and seeing the exchange between Gary and Tony, I stopped to wonder. With today's hurry lifestyle and all of the technology we have at our disposal, has DXing changed for better or worse? There's no doubt DXing today is very different from the DXing of yesterday, let alone yesteryear. Some people would argue the pileups are more unruly. Others would argue that DXing is now point and click. The argument could also be made that the expeditions today look more like high-profile sponsored events than true the expeditions. But is it really better than we might think? My friend Paul Dunphy, VE1DX, and his local QR peers take a lighter look at ourselves and ask us to think about when the golden days of DXing really were, or are. We took a walk down to the village and ran across several of the local QRPers sitting on a park bench talking about a number of things, but mostly DX. Some of these QRPers, that's the low power operators, had been around the track a few times, but we had learned long ago that the true understanding of DX, low range communications to other countries, is not always measured by years on the air. Since DX was a topic that always caught our attention, we decided to see what was up. What's new? We asked, sitting down. One of the more elderly QRPers replied, we were just talking about the golden days of DXing, about those days when things were better than they are today, when DXers stood tall and were the top echelon of ham radio, when you could be proud to call yourself a DXer. Not like today. DXing is a lost art, and we all agree on that. But there seems to be a bit of a problem on just when the golden days of DXing were. We weren't sure that DXing had become a lost art, so we asked for clarification. Two or three of the QRPers started to answer at once, so we held up our hands. Take a turn, each, we said, and let's start with the most senior one. The QRPer who had started the conversation jumped up, beaming with pride. I was first licensed in 1947 when I was just 15, he began, and I'm sure that the golden days of DX were back then. We'd built our own rigs, and we didn't have any 2-meter spotting repeaters or anything like that. We found the DX on CW or AM, and the DX was real DX, not the stuff that's kicking around today. Once single sideband came around, DX was gone. He looked around at the group, and it was clear he was ready to defend his position. No one said anything, so we nodded to the next QRPer. Well, I started in the early 60s and did most of my serious DXing in the 60s and 70s. And that was when DX was DX. When Danny and Gus and Don were activating the new ones, we had a simplex frequency on 2 meters where we all met and exchanged DX information. And we never bothered with AM either, he said, glaring at the first QRP. No, sir. We used CW and single sideband, and sometimes we would even call the locals on the landline or give them a one ringer to let them know when something rare showed up. We all understood the true meaning of DX is. Somehow we doubted that any of the group understood this, but we simply nodded to the third QRPer. He was ready to make his pitch. These old guys can't see beyond their D-104s and straight keys, he started in. I've been on the air for 12 years now, and the golden days of the X had just ended. I worked the big guns like Marty at Romeo. The golden days of the DXing are winding down, and we will be gone by the end of the year. When us real DXers operate it, we all use solid-state transmitters, DX spotting repeaters, and packet clusters. We logged all our contacts with our computers, and we worked DX on 30, 17, and 12 meters, too. These guys don't even have warp band antennas, and they say they've seen the golden days of DXing. How can you say you've done it all when you haven't worked a rare one on 17 meters RTTY that popped up on the packet cluster, And he sat down, just as sure that he was as right as the other two. Things were quiet for about 30 seconds as the QRPs looked at us, waiting for a decision. Son of a gun. Should you think we were going to offer an opinion on this one? Think again. For it has often been said, once a can of worms has been opened, you'd need a bigger can to get them all back in. Then the silence ended with, what do you think? And when were the golden days of DXing? And tell us who was right. So we did the only thing we could do. We hauled a group of them up the hill to see the old timer. He was sitting in front of his rig, tuning 15 meters for the polar opening to Asia. He looked up and motioned for everyone to sit down. After a few minutes, he looked over and asked what was new. This brought forth the same arguments we had heard down in the park, complete with arm waving and pounding of fists as points were made and territory staked out. The old-timer looked at the QRPs for a moment and said, You all seem convinced that you are right, but what makes you think the golden days of DXing are over? On this there was agreement, and to get two QRPs to agree on anything was rare. To have three agree was unheard of. The Internet and the new HF regulations are destroying DX, they yelled in unison. We were impressed. The old-timer took a deep breath, glanced at us with that, why did you bring these co-opers here? Look and reply. None of you understand the true meaning of DX is. Didn't Albert always say that all things were relative, although some more so? He spelled it all out in his special theory of DX, but none of you could understand it, could you? Did it ever occur to you that the golden days of DX are right now? And that no matter what the Internet, the AARRL, the FCC, the RSGB, or any other technical or political group does or says will change this? The great days of DXing are here. The signs are everywhere. And the golden days of DXing are the great days of DXing. The QRPers glanced back and forth at each other with confused and puzzled looks. Then they all got up and slowly made their way out the door. We could hear them muttering as they made their way down the hill, and it was clear they did not believe or understand what had been said. We even had lingering doubts, so we asked the old-timer. All this talk about the Internet, the no-code lowering, and the standard, and destroying DX. Do you think the QRPers have a point? The old-timer looked up from his rig, stared us right in the eyes, and simply said, no. And with that, he turned back toward his rig and began tuning 15 again. It was clear this was all he was going to say. So we made our way down the hill and toward the library. For a while, we were sure we understood the true meaning of DX is, but we felt it wouldn't hurt to read Albert's book on the special theory of DX once again. These are trying times in this world of DX, and like the hero of Muff King, Lord Baden-Powell, once advised, we wanted to be prepared. That's it. For this month's column, I might say for this month's recording on the Courage Handyham system of World Radio Online, too, a special thanks to Jim Brookman, amateur called WA4PXP, Gary McClellan, K7CD, and Tony Martin, W4FOA, for their trip down memory lane. Also thanks to Paul Dumphy, VE1DX, for his take. on the golden days of DXing. I look forward to hearing your comments, complaints, whatever is on your mind. If you have a story or opinion you would like to share, please send it to me at the following, the amateur call sign N0VD at DXCentral, one word, DXCentral.com. I'll do my best to include it in an upcoming column. Look for you on Facebook or Twitter as well. And until next time, see you in the pileups. And that was a rather chuckly piece from Kelly Jones, N0VD, in DX World. Folks, this does bring me up to time for this month's reading of World Radio Online here on the Courage Handy Ham system. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham system, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may reach at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Handy Ham is always spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M. One word, Handy Ham, lowercase, at courage.org. The website is www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're about 50 miles below Boston, right on Buzzards Bay, heading to Cape Cod. If you have any comments to me directly, I'd be glad to hear from you via email also. It's my call sign, N1BLF, at comcast.net. Thanks a lot for listening along here on the Courage Handy Ham System, 73 and 1BLF.